Hello, this is Nancy. I'm reading with you today from the Pantograph. Today is October 8th, 2018. We'll begin with our main headline this morning, Families Line Up for Fire Truck Parade. Annual event kicks off Fire Prevention Week. And this is by Kevin Barlow. Reese Lane may only be 2.5 years old, but already he has a strong say in the family, says his grandfather, Kirby Reese. Reese was one of hundreds of kids who spent early Sunday afternoon in the State Farm corporate parking lot following the annual Del Thomas Fire Truck Parade to kick off Fire Prevention Week. There was only one place we could be this afternoon, Kirby Reese said. This was it. He has to be here, and he's having a blast. The youngster, along with his mother, Kara, had the opportunity to sit on one of about 3 dozen fire trucks on hand for the parade. Teresa Meadows brought her 3 children, Kelsey, 6, Cassidy, 8, and Owen, 1, to the event, and they had a chance to meet Bellflower Fire Chief Lloyd Power and the department's mascot, Blaze, a black and white spotted Dalmatian. We come from a family with lots of firefighters, Meadows said, so we are proud to be here, and it's great for the kids. The parade started in 1982 when Thomas, then the fire chief at Hudson, persuaded other departments to organize the parade, which begins at Franklin Park and ends in the State Farm parking lot. Once there, families are encouraged to tour the trucks and visit with firefighters and first responders. Some departments distribute fire prevention materials and small plastic fire helmets to the children. This is a blast, said 7-year-old Kyle Nebbett of Bloomington, who came with his father, Tom. This is what I want to be when I grow up. If I could, I would drive a truck right now. It was the men and women behind the machines that captured the attention of 5-year-old Amy Winchell of Normal. These people are so cool, she said. My grandpa is a fireman, and he is my hero. He tells me I can be a firefighter, too, if I want to be when I get really old. Sam Reef of Normal just turned 15 and said he is going to get started with his career in the next few months. I'm already looking into programs for teens and students and see what I can do, he said. I know they probably won't let me drive a truck for a while, but I would love to fight fires someday. Fire Prevention Week runs through October 13th, and this year the theme is Look, Listen, Learn, Be Aware. Fire can happen anywhere, and is intended to educate people about 3 basic but essential steps to take to reduce the likelihood of having a fire, and how to escape safely in the event of one. Fire departments across central Illinois will be visiting schools and holding events to educate both young and older residents about fire prevention and the importance of having working smoke detectors. The Bloomington Fire Department will hold a ceremony to officially dedicate a firefighter memorial at 11 a.m. on Saturday at Miller Park. As always, no rain fell during the parade. However, showers started right before and about 1 hour after the trucks arrived at the State Farm parking lot. Prior to Sunday, rain had never been a factor in the history of the event, according to Thomas. Also on the front page, we have the headline, Resolution to Dock Permit Issue, eyed. This is by Maria Nagley. A proposed city ordinance could settle pending code violation cases involving 16 non-conforming boat docks at Lake Bloomington. This has been discussed for a few years and has been very emotional, said City Manager Tim Gleason. But about a month and a half ago, we changed direction a little bit where we saw a better way of addressing this instead of lumping everybody into one basket. And that goes to the council Monday night. The council is expected to vote on the matter when it meets at 6 p.m. Monday at City Hall. The proposal, if adopted, would create a comprehensive dock permitting program and put in place boat dock construction standards at Lake Bloomington. Attorney Michael Philippi, a partner in the Chicago-based Nixon Peabody Law Firm that represents not all but many of the non-compliant dock owners, thinks the proposal is a good resolution. Adoption of the proposal will place all leaseholders at the lake on equal footing with respect to how the dock issue will be permitted and regulated, he said. At issue are docks built without permits by residents who do not have lakefront property on the city-owned reservoir. The illegal docks are on shoreline set aside for access by the public or other lake residents who do not have lakefront property, according to city officials. Many of the docks have been there for years, often with informal permission, but Bloomington officials now consider docks erected without official permits to be trespassing on city-owned property. Philippi, who attended Illinois Wesleyan University, has a lakeshore house and owns the Mucky Duck Marina at Lake Bloomington. It seems unfair to me that the people who live off of the lakeshore and had the same lake leases that I have were being told all of a sudden they couldn't have docks, said Philippi. So I represent a number of them on a pro bono basis. Philippi added, I was fortunate to have good cooperative meetings with the city's attorneys and ultimately came to what I think is a good resolution for the lake leaseholders. Everybody who has a lease and a contractual easement to use the lake, whether they live on the lake shore or off, have the same rights and even footing, which is fair and should be done. In April, the council unanimously directed the water department staff to issue violation notices to non-conforming docks. The council agreed fines would not begin to accrue until the city's administrative court heard the case and found a dock to be non-compliant. A special court date was set for those cases, but canceled. Under the proposal, people who have a dock will be eligible to apply for a dock permit as long as they both maintain a valid lake lease and a residence on the leased premise. A new permit will cost $250 with an annual renewal fee of $50. Existing dock owners will have to pay the $50 annual renewal fee to get a permit. City staff estimates there are 236 existing docks eligible for a permit. The proposed ordinance limits the total number of permits to 245. The city will continue to try to resolve issues with about 7 dock owners who do not have a lease with the city or do not maintain a residence at the lake, said Gleason. Lake Bloomington and Evergreen Lake are the city's primary sources of drinking water. In other action Monday, the council will consider creating a business registry program and increasing more than 100 fees for a variety of city-issued permits, annual licenses, inspections, and miscellaneous services, and ratifying labor contracts that give union workers at the Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Arts and Public Works Department a 1.75% general wage increase, effective May 1, 2018, through April 30, 2019, and union workers in the Water Department a 2-year contract with a 2% wage increase, retroactive to May 1, 2018. We will move on to more local news that is not on the front page. We have the headline, Jewish Food Fair set to return October 24th. And this article is by the Pantograph staff. The 56th annual Jewish Food Fair, sponsored by members of Moses Montefiore Temple, is set for October 24th at the temple, 102 Robin Hood Lane, Bloomington. The fair, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., is famous for its carryout lunch that includes a kosher-style corned beef sandwich, kosher dill pickle, bag of chips, and rochlach, a traditional Jewish pastry. The event also includes baked goods and specialty items. Tickets for the carryout lunch cost $9 each, and organizers suggest they be purchased in advance because lunches sometimes sell out. Tickets are available through noon, October 22nd, from any temple member, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. weekdays at the temple office, or at the Garlic Press, the Mole Hole, Great Harvest Bread Company, and Crossroads. Delivery is available for orders of 10 or more lunches and an extra rochlach. Raglach trays of 9 are available for $14. Arrangements must be made when tickets are purchased by calling the temple office 309-662-3182. Proceeds from the sale benefit Moses Montefiore Temple and the local high school bands. The deli will sell corned beef, hot dogs, Vienna salami, and an assortment of items ordered from Chicago, including rye bread, kosher-style corned beef, and kosher pickles. The freezer includes blintzes, noodlekugel, cabbage rolls, and matzo ball soup. Bakery goods include raglach, sour cream coffee cake, challah, and strudel. The Jewish Food Fair Cookbook, 292 pages full of Jewish favorites from members of the local congregation, will be available for $15. Weeks before the fair, temple women start cooking and freezing baked goods. The Sunday before the fair is dubbed the Big Bag Caper, as a crew of congregants prepare 4,000 lunch bags. The sandwiches are made the night before the fair and kept in a refrigerated truck overnight. The day of the fair, Bloomington and Normal band parents help pack the sandwiches, pickles, and raclette. Bloomington Sailor Returns Home by Jesse Hawthorne of the U.S. Navy Office of Community Outreach. A 213 Bloomington High School graduate and Bloomington native is one of 1,200 sailors who have returned to Naval Station Mayport after a six-month deployment aboard the USS Iwo Jima. Petty Officer Second Class David Vaught is a machinist's mate aboard the Iwo Jima, an amphibious assault ship, who recently deployed to the Middle East and Mediterranean areas of operation. For more than half of the sailors aboard Iwo Jima, the six-month journey served as their first deployment. A machinist's mate is responsible for maintaining the ship's main engine and the boiler, along with the generators, to help give the ship electricity. I love traveling and learning more about my job and the sailors I work with, Vaught said. Vaught credits success in the Navy to many of the lessons learned in Bloomington. I was taught to always try to get the work done in a timely manner, and the quality of the work you do is important, Vaught said. Iwo Jima made port calls in Haifa, Israel, Limassol, Cyprus, Aqaba, Jordan, and Malaga, Spain. The visits helped grow the alliance between the U.S. and its partner nations, as well as providing an opportunity for the crew to experience cultures from around the world, according to Navy officials. Deployed since February 7th as part of an Amphibious Ready Group, or ARG, the ship participated in exercises Juniper Cobra and Eager Lion. It also hosted a 10-day embarkation of Egyptian naval officers to discuss concepts of amphibious naval operations and strengthen partner nation capabilities. Serving in the Navy is important to me because of family tradition with being a third generation to join the Navy, Vaught said. Our next story, Solar Farm Permit Heads Back to Board. This is by Cheryl Wolf. The Woodford County Board once again will decide whether to approve a special use permit for a solar farm on the southwest side of Eureka. The Woodford County Zoning Board of Appeals on September 25th approved the request for Atlanta-based Sol America to build a 2-megawatt solar farm on agricultural land near Marshall Road and the city limits. It was the second time the ZBA considered the matter. The county board had returned the request in August due to procedural error. It is incompatible to have 25 acres of solar panels next to a residential area, Eureka Mayor Scott Zimmer said. Compatibility affects citizen enjoyment. Enjoyment will be affected because it is not compatible. In its approval of the permit, ZBA members also read an independent report, which found in the affirmative for all findings of fact for the project from the Tri-County Regional Planning Commission. The ZBA has often used Tri-County as an independent source to analyze the points the ZBA must consider in making its decision, including health and safety factors. The request returns to the County Board on October 16th. State's Attorney Greg Minger previously said the Board has only two options: send the matter back to the ZBA for reconsideration due to procedural errors, or approval of the ZBA recommendation. Minger said the County Board cannot vote to deny the permit. He said ZBA is the quasi-judicial board for the County Board, and basic decisions need to be done by that board after hearing sworn testimony at a hearing. The County Board provides administrative review to make sure procedures were followed. The solar farm near Eureka is not the only one in Illinois that has been challenged for its incompatibility with developing neighborhoods on the fringe or within the agricultural landscape. Most objections are related to aesthetics. At its September meeting, the ZBA granted an extension to an approved solar farm special use permit near Minonk. A special use permit has also been approved for a solar farm near Spring Bay. In other local news, 100 join rally against abortion. This is by Kevin Barlow. A little rain didn't bother about 100 people on Sunday, who gathered in front of the Epiphany Catholic Church at 1000 East College Avenue in Normal to protest abortion. "Abortion kills, and I am a devout Catholic, and I am doing everything I can for the abolition of Roe versus Wade," said Ed Horn of Normal. "All of us here are the voice of the unborn. We would like to see some changes." The group joins the National Life Chain effort, where people gather on the first Sunday in October to make signs and gather peacefully in support of pro-life causes. The Catholic Church recognizes October as a month dedicated to pro-life causes, said Paul McNamara of Normal. "We are all praying that some changes are made. We will be out here every day until that happens." The group stood through a pouring rain, but nobody left, said Virginia Harris of Normal, who did not know about the protest until she drove by. "I agree with their message, and so I wanted to get out and visit with them and find out a little bit more about why they feel so strongly about this," she said. "I'm glad I did, because it really inspired me to stick around and support them. If they're going to stand through rain, I can let them know I am with them too." The protest had nothing to do with the Supreme Court confirmation of Judge Brett Kavanaugh, they said. "That was just a coincidence in timing," McNamara said. Not everyone was happy with the protesters. One man, Normal resident Bill Turner, was taking pictures of some of the protesters, but said he didn't want to create a disturbance. "Everyone has a right to say or do whatever they want, within reason," he said. "I don't want them saying it in my neighborhood, but it's also not worth getting into an altercation, because I'm probably not going to change their minds, and they won't change my mind. So I will let them be, because they have a right to voice their opinions." We have a headline in some state news: ties sever over stovepipe hat. Lincoln Museum director dissolves deal with foundation. This story is from Springfield. Friction over attempts to verify an iconic stovepipe hat's connection to Abraham Lincoln has prompted the director of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum to sever financial ties to the organization's fundraising arm at a critical juncture for the nonprofit foundation, which is struggling to pay back millions of dollars borrowed to buy the hat and other artifacts related to the 16th president. Alan Lowe told the Associated Press that he dissolved his $25,000 a year consulting deal with the Lincoln Presidential Library Foundation, offered 2 years ago as an inducement to lure him to Springfield. "He wants to forestall questions about his commitment as head of the 12-year-old library and museum, which he says is now at odds on some issues with the foundation. I don't want there to be any question about my priorities," Lowe said. "Therefore, I felt it was best to give up my contract with the foundation." Lowe indicated his irritation in a statement last month after WBEZ Chicago reported that the foundation had commissioned secret studies in 2013 and in 2015, including DNA analysis, to develop unassailable evidence that the 19th century stovepipe hat linked to Lincoln actually belonged to him. The test was inconclusive, and historians who studied it suggested that the museum soften its claim about the hat. Lowe said he wasn't fully appraised of the reviews until August. The foundation should always provide prompt, complete information to the Presidential Library, Lowe said in a statement. It should work with us to seek the best ways of preserving Abraham Lincoln's legacy. Discord is something the foundation can't afford. It still owes $9.7 million, a decade after borrowing $23 million to buy the hat and 1,400 Lincoln-related artifacts and documents from collector Louise Taper. The foundation announced last spring that it wants to pay the balance by the time the note comes due in October 2019. The Associated Press reported in August that the search had begun for an auction house to handle selling parts of the collection if necessary. The situation catapulted into pop culture status, with Lincoln fans starting a GoFundMe campaign. The 54-year-old Lowe arrived in Lincoln's hometown in July 2016 from his post as inaugural director of the George W. Bush Presidential Library and Museum in Dallas. The $175,000 salary offered by the Lincoln Museum was less than Lowe's previous pay. Governor Bruce Rauner's office asked the foundation, which operates separately from the state agency museum, to supplement that figure with a $25,000 annual contract for Lowe's expertise as an ex officio board member and assistance with fundraising, according to Foundation Board Vice Chairman Nick Calm. Neither Lowe nor the foundation would provide a copy of the contract. Unfortunately, he feels that we're at odds, Calm said. The sole purpose of the foundation's existence is to support the museum, all the artifacts, and all the staff, right up to the executive director. And from the State Journal Register, we have the headline, Jordan voted top Illinois athlete. Michael Jordan, who led the Chicago Bulls to six NBA titles, was voted the top athlete in Illinois history by participants in the Illinois Top 200 Project, followed by Bears stars Dick Butkus and Walter Payton. The top five also includes beloved Chicago Cubs player Ernie Banks and track and field legend Jackie Joyner-Kersee. The Top 200 Project lets Illinoisans vote every 2 weeks on the state's most inspiring leaders, greatest inventions, top businesses, and much more. By the state's bicentennial on December 3rd, voters will have chosen 10 favorites in 20 different categories, the Illinois Top 200. Voting in the next category, Groundbreaking Women, is underway at www.illinoistop200.com. The nominees include Jane Addams, Hillary Clinton, Mother Jones, and Oprah Winfrey. Here are the top 10 Illinois athletes chosen in online voting. Michael Jordan. Jordan is widely considered the greatest basketball player of all time. He was named MVP five times in his 15-year NBA career and led the Chicago Bulls to six championships. Dick Butkus, the Chicago native, played his entire football career in Illinois, from high school to the Chicago Bears. He led the University of Illinois to a Rose Bowl victory, then enjoyed a pro career that earned him spots in eight Pro Bowls. Walter Payton. Payton was a star running back for the Bears from 1975 to 1987. Sweetness was known for his electrifying runs and amassed multiple rushing records during his career. Ernie Banks. Banks hit 512 home runs and had 2,583 hits for the Chicago Cubs between 1953 and 1971. Known as Mr. Cub, he was league MVP twice and an All-Star 11 times. Jackie Joyner-Kersee. Born in East St. Louis, Joyner-Kersee overcame asthma to earn 6 Olympic medals, 3 of them gold, and 4 world championships. Sports Illustrated named her the greatest female athlete of all time. Red Grange. Grange achieved national fame in 1924 by scoring 5 touchdowns and a U of I victory over Michigan. He went on to a career with the Bears and breathed life into what became the National Football League. Bonnie Blair. Blair grew up in Champaign, took up speed skating, and became one of the most decorated athletes in Olympic history, winning 4 gold medals and 1 bronze. Ryan Sandberg. Rhino was a perennial all-star at second base for the Chicago Cubs over a 16-year career. He made 10 all-star appearances, won 9 gold gloves, and was the National League MVP in 1984. Ron Santo. Santo played third base for the Chicago Cubs from 1960 to 1973, and for the White Sox in 1974. He was named to 9 All-Star teams and won 5 Golden Gloves. He announced Cubs radio broadcasts for 20 years. Jack Johnson, the first African-American heavyweight champ, moved to Chicago at the height of his fame. He faced tremendous racism and in 1913 was convicted on trumped-up morals charges, for which he was pardoned this year. The Illinois Top 200 is a joint initiative of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, the State Journal Register, and the Illinois Bicentennial Commission. In today's Daily Digest, we have Chittick's Teams Make Donations. The Chittick's Junior High School 7th and 8th grade girls basketball teams are donating proceeds from their October 2nd game against Prairie Central to the American Red Cross for Hurricane Florence relief. The team raised almost $200 for relief through their concessions and stand sales. In How Time Flies, 100 years ago today, on October 8th in 1918, the World War may be winding down, but another one is imminently on the horizon, the fight against the Spanish influenza. The Red Cross and local health departments are mobilizing, and outbreaks are raging all over the country. Hundreds have already died. 75 years ago, on October 8, 1943, a tragic story comes from Philadelphia, where Hubert Merrick, 52, had gone to see his son at naval training. While he was there, a kid beat him and stole his watch. Now he has died of his injuries. A military policeman saw the attack but couldn't catch the assailant. 50 years ago, on October 8, 1968, Normal officially annexed its first industrial park site and then approved the plans for the Union Camp sheet paper plant. Union Camp will be a tenant in the park. The 49-acre site is part of a farm formerly owned by Lloyd and Dorothy Westfall. And 25 years ago today, on October 8th in 1993, at a bench trial, Curtis Schwartz admitted setting a fire in the county jail, sending 4 inmates to the hospital. But he argued he should be acquitted because a fellow gang member made him do it. Maybe, but Judge Whitty didn't buy it and found Schwartz guilty. We have a flick fact here today, too. Believe it or not, it was 1969 when the state legislature passed a resolution making English the official language of Illinois. Before then, from 1923 to 1969, in fact, the state's official language was American. We'll take a short break, and then we'll be back with the second half hour of the Pantograph for October 8th, 2018. Please stay tuned.